afternoon. Thank you very much for being here. Welcome to the February 21st meeting of the Board of Trustees of the University of District of Columbia. Beverly, would you go ahead and call the roll, please?
Mr. Bell?
Here.
Dr. Barazzoni?
Here.
Dr. Kreider? Dr. Jarvis?
Present.
Mr. Dyke?
Present.
Mr. Felton?
Present.
Ms. Jackson?
Present.
Dr. Lemus? Ms. Lewis? President Mason?
Here.
General Schwartz?
Here.
Mr. Scott? Mr. Shelton?
Here.
Dr. Tard?
Here.
Mr. Weiner? Mr. Chair, you have a quorum.
When we go into executive session, we need to report back out or provide that commentary. So I wanted to add that. So thank you. Thank you very much for being here today. We had to move our, we didn't have to, but we wanted to move our board meeting today because the mayor is having a meeting here at the university regarding budget planning at the Student Center at 6:30. So we wanted to be able to maximize participation for folks in this room if you're interested in being there. So we moved our meeting up. And so, which means we're going to finish at 6:30 or earlier. And then if you're so inclined, you can participate at the mayor's meeting at the Student Center as well. All right. The next item up on our agenda is approval of the minutes for the November 28th meeting. It has been moved. It has been moved and seconded. All those in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Hearing none? Seeing none? Oh, sorry. One abstention noted. Thank you. So the minutes are approved as presented. Thank you. The next item up on the agenda are action items. We'll start with the Operations Committee. Trustee Shelton.
We have a contract for UDC TV.
We have a recommendation to the board approval of a contract with the Ambrose contract for the UDC TV station to build our inventory of programming for the TV station that we have now that we have the capacity to service the world. And the resolution is recommended to the board for approval today. So I so move.
Second. Okay. It has been moved and seconded.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I have raised this issue with the president before, and mm-hmm. maybe the contractor is the person who can fix this problem, but when you look at the guide on television,
mm-hmm.
There is never a listing for the program which is being shown.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you go by the guide, it just says UDC programming.
Mm-hmm.
So you never know who's talking, you never know what's coming up, and I wonder if this contractor can be, if in this contract there is any language mm-hmm. that speaks to that issue.
On, yeah. Okay. Do you want to speak to that, Ron?
I can. Actually, I checked on that, and then I went and checked the guide, and when I checked it, it had the programs that were being shown. And what was explained to me was that the challenges that our guy, Ed, actually has to go and type in the programs. There's no way to automatically do it. So I guess sometimes he doesn't get to it, and it just says UDC, but when he can, it actually has the programs. I don't think this contract would do that, though, because all they're doing is providing content to fill some of the gaps in the programs, right? So that's the answer to the question, that we can do it. It's just a question of the manpower to consistently do it so that it doesn't just say UDC. It'll say the actual thing that's being shown on the station.
So if I can just persist, because more often than not, there's nothing that says the program.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe an intern can do it.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that you should have 100% of the time a listing of what is going to be on the UDC forum.
Give it a shot.
Yeah. All right. So just get back procedurally. We had a motion and it was seconded. So now discussion is in order on this resolution. So any other questions or comments on this?
We definitely...
Oh, I'm sorry. Trustee Dyke.
I'm just going to note that I obviously have to vote for something that's going to service the world. I think I like
doing that. Thank you. But please understand is that they renovated a couple of years ago, so that we could reach our students all over the world and fully come online in the world. And we have a lot of programming, as it was explained to me, but we don't have enough for the what we have. And you're right, it should be listed. We've also, so that you can understand, is we've had personnel issues. There's a very small staff involved with running the TV station. And everybody has suffered because of staffing issues. But they're doing a very good job, and they've come a long way from the little video system that I first saw, even though they did at one time have a full operating TV station, fully more functional TV station. But they're better now than they were before. The company that's doing it is a national company, and it really looks like an opportunity to flesh out and beef up the opportunity that we have with our television and TV technology. And I'm sure someone from staff can add any more. Troy is smiling. He knows I'm tap dancing.
So is the contract just for $33,000, or is it per year? Because it looks like it's just for the three-year period. Okay. And it's a license which we can terminate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Call for the question? Or you want more discussion?
Any more discussion?
Just a clarification about when contracts come before the board. I thought we had a threshold, and that was above the $33,000.
Well, I think it's because this is a multi-year, but okay. Because this is a multi-year contract,
okay.
That's why it has to technically come before the board, so the cost doesn't matter in that particular instance. All right. Any questions? All right. Seeing none. All right. I will now read the last paragraph of the resolution. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the university is hereby authorized to forward to the Council of the District of Columbia for its approval the proposed multi-year contract number GF-2017-P-0152. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Seeing none, the motion passes unanimously. The resolution passes.
Okay. The second item is the work plan for fiscal year 2018 teaching and learning support. I'm confident that everybody got copies, and the motion is to accept.
Second. All right. The motion has been made and seconded. To discussion, all those discussion is now in order. Does anyone have any questions, comments on this?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
There are key performance indicators. Which is something that we are very glad to see.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if there are baseline figures for some of these KPIs.
Any answer to that?
Well, no.
For example, if you say flex class space consists of 20% of all space, does that mean it's at 10% now? I'm just
zero.
Okay. Okay. So then my question is where are we? What's the baseline
for the data? Yes.
Maria Bird, Executive Director of the Office of Planning. Maria Bird, Executive Director of the Office of Planning and Institutional Effectiveness. Baseline. I know we talk about baseline data. We're working right now to kind of create some of that. There has been some baseline data done in areas like student success.
So, Mr. Chairman, I just suggest that if there are baseline figures which are known, for example, I heard someone say that the baseline for flex space is zero, so we know we're moving from zero to 20%.
Mm-hmm.
So where those things are known and where it's possible to include that in the KPIs, it would be helpful.
I think that's a good point because that's the only way you're going to be able to show your growth in this area and that you've had success in the area. I'm curious, Ms. Bird, why is the goal to improve IT infrastructure and service delivery 99.99% uptime?
That's a IT terminology.
Okay.
And four nines is kind of, three nines, four nines, five nines.
Yeah.
And so that's the percentage that it equates to. That just means how much we plan to be up.
Okay. And do we have an idea of how much we're not up now?
Right now we're at about three nines or four.
three, almost four nines.
Okay, so that's another example where if we achieve this, it'll be significant, the success that we achieve in this area.
Correct.
Okay. Anyone else have questions? All right, question has been called and seconded. Okay, let me get back to the beginning. Sorry.
I second.
Sorry. Okay, so there's nothing. Well, all right, so then the issue, let me get to the agenda. Sorry, guys. So then the issue, the motion before us is to approve the teaching and learning support plan that has been put forward for us for approval. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Oh, sorry.
Teaching and learning
support.
Teaching and learning support.
Have we gone to the next one?
No.
Did I?
No. It's administrative.
Okay. The operations committee is teaching and learning support.
Right. Did I say that wrong?
No.
Okay. So all those in favor of approving the work plan fiscal year 2018 teaching and learning support, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Seeing none, the plan is approved. With the note, please note that, you know, where we can, let's insert the base measures so that we can measure the growth and the success that we achieve in these areas. All right. So thank you, Trustee Felton, Shelton, for that report.
That concludes my report, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you. All right. Academic and Student Affairs Committee.
Committee met on January 23rd. We reviewed three work plans, Advanced Teaching and Learning, the Advanced Academy, and the Curriculum Pathway. The committee looked at the work plans, and while there were questions about expected outcomes, we agreed to move these work plans forward with the addition of the outcomes in there. The KPIs cover, for the most part, those expected outcomes. Again, I suspect it's the same issue of baseline data.
Okay. And did I understand you to say that you wanted goals to be added? What did you say you were looking to have added? I'm sorry, I misunderstood that part.
I'm sorry.
When you first started your comments, you said that you'd received the information and you were looking to have certain information added that you thought was added?
The expected outcome.
The expected, okay.
That's what we.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think the conversation was that in some of them we did not have the KPIs, and we agreed that when we do the quarterly reports, we would have the KPIs and the progress on those KPIs.
Okay. All righty. Are there any questions or comments?
Call for the question.
Mr. Chairman, I think that you've already just indicated that there should be also baseline data. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So
yes.
I don't, because you're asking for that each.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. All righty. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay, seeing none. So then I'll ask that we vote for approval of the work plan for fiscal year 2018 for advanced teaching and learning methods, modern learning tools, and pedagogy, with the understanding that where available, baseline data will be incorporated into the measurements as well. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Hearing none, seeing none, the plan is approved. Thank you very much. All right, Trustee Tard, next item.
That would be Trustee
Williams. Oh.
There were three just now. There were three work
plans. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. Trustee Weiner. And Trustee Weiner is not here. Is there someone here that's going to present for him?
Okay.
May I ask?
Let me go ahead.
Are we on Advanced Academy now?
No, actually, those three were included in the work plans for fiscal year 2018. So when I asked for the approval, that should have been for all three of them. So it was for the Advanced Teaching and Learning Methods, the Advanced Academy, and the Curriculum Pathways.
Okay.
So if there was, do any trustees have any questions about that, or do they want to have any comments about that? Were you clear, Trustee Jarvis? Okay. All right. So then with that, we can move to student outcomes. This is the Student Outcomes Committee. Trustee Weiner is the chair, and he's not here tonight. Ron, are you able to add anything on this?
No, just that I'd say there was a vigorous discussion about this work plan. Mm-hmm. We did have a long talk about establishing baselines, and I think Josh and the other members of the committee gave us some good guidance that we actually went back and adjusted some, added some goals to include things like transfer students and so forth. And so all of that is reflected in here at the instruction of the committee, and now we're bringing it for your approval. And there are other committee members here, so I don't know if they want to add something.
Right. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions or comments on this?
Chairman, I did review the document for change in language, and I believe it is there.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, in particular, I noticed the first goal where we had questions and comments on that. So thank you. All right, then. I think then we're in a position where we can vote on this then. Is there a motion?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Moved. Seconded. It's been moved and seconded that we vote on the approval of the work plan for fiscal year 2018 student development and success. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Seeing none, hearing none. This work plan is also approved. Thank you very much. All right. Sure. Trustee Felton.
Yeah, I just have a general question. We said that the indicators would be available for the quarterly reports.
Mm-hmm.
What's the process for, or is what is there a process to get there before the meeting?
Mm-hmm.
In the event that either there are marks that we don't see that we believe should be there, or that we are uncomfortable with the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, kind of somebody give us a sense of who will do that.
Mm-hmm.
So the Office of Planning and Institutional Effectiveness has worked with the chiefs through the entire process to establish the goals and the objectives, make sure that they all are connected across the different work plans, and it's her job and that office's job to track them over time to see what sort of progress we're making and how close we're coming to the key performance indicators that we have laid out for our achievement. Now, these are all very aggressive goals and timetables, and we won't meet them all, as you'll see when we report on the fiscal year 17 work.
Mm-hmm.
But her job is to make sure that we know where we are, and if we're not where we thought we would be, to make sure we talk about why. Does that pretty much cover it, Maria? Yes. And so I guess to Trustee Felton's question, you'd want to see what we are tracking as performance indicators before it gets to the board at the next meeting. And I think most of them are developed already. Am I right to say that? So we can put them together and send them to the board. Give me a time frame.
So you're just saying of the track?
The KPIs for the work plans.
So the KPIs that we have will be for the end of this year. That's what the KPIs will be dictated by. But are you speaking of like the action items, the objectives underneath each work plan? So we do have a tracking mechanism that identifies if we're on track, in progress, or if we, for whatever reason, have not met that timeline, and then we would have an explanation for that.
Right.
And that would be provided to you all prior to the meeting, and then it'd be discussed during that quarterly meeting. So we would have quarterly updates.
So the process, as I understand it, is that the KPI is what we plan to accomplish by the end of the year, and every quarter we'll tell you how close we are to meeting that goal.
Correct, because those objectives should all, so if we don't meet those objectives, technically we should not meet our KPI.
Right.
But our key performance basically says, yes, based off of the objectives being completed, we should be at this point. You know, so if we do these five programs, we should be able to reach a 50% retention rate.
Okay, I'll just wait, you know.
Does that work?
Till we get there.
Okay.
Thank you. All right. The next item on the agenda is the report of the chairperson. I don't have much to report out. I did want to say that at the last meeting, we had a lot of vigorous discussion about the strategic plan and the planning process. And we had a working session in January where trustees were able to get together and discuss the status of the plan and the direction and ask questions. And I think that was very helpful and informative to the trustees. So I want to thank everyone for for participating in that was able to attend. I think we got a lot of good information out of that, and I'm looking forward to the strategic plan that's coming along. Two other points that I wanted to add, the convocation in February was delightful. It was a very good event, just wonderful. And for those of you that didn't know, Dr. Kreider got the Martella A. Minor Award, and that was very nice to see her. General Schwartz, you had previously been the recipient of that, correct? So it was very nice to see her get that recognition. And so
Dr. Drew Jarvis got it.
Oh, you got it as well? I'm so sorry. I didn't see that. So, okay. So she's in very good company there. So Trustee Jarvis was a recipient as well. Thank you for letting me know. So she's in very good company, obviously, and I think it was the whole program was just delightful from beginning to end. And then I just wanted to touch base because, you know, there's so much discussion right now about DCPS. And as you all know, there's been administrative changes. And so the administrative changes over at DCPS are what they are. But one thing that has been out there is the graduation and who deserved to graduate and who didn't and what have you. And all that's being reviewed. But I just want the students of DCPS to know that we believe in you and we support you. And this is your university. And I just want to state it again that we educate more of the DCPS students than the private schools combined. So we love you, we respect you, we want you here. I have kids in DCPS, I have confidence in it, and so I think that gets lost because, and there was a young lady that wrote a nice editorial as well that's a Ballou graduate that's actually here at our university, and I was very appreciative of the fact because I think it often gets lost while the big folks are talking about whatever they need to do, but there's the real people, real students that are involved, and there's a lot of hardworking folks that are here doing their thing, and I don't want everyone to be tarnished with a brush. So while the investigations continue and do what they do, this university will continue to serve UDC and anyone else that wants to come here, and you're going to get a good education. So I just wanted to put that out there. And then if I can have one moment of privilege, I need to add to our agenda that we're going to have a presentation at the end of our meeting from Dr. Kingberry about the faculty wanting to have a spot on the trustee board. And so there's going to be a presentation. I'd like to add that with the approval of the trustees. It would just be a discussion item, and that would be included under new business. So are the trustees in favor of adding this?
So moved. Okay. Seconded.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. So at the end of our meeting under new business, we will also have a report from Dr. Kingberry. Thank you. All righty. And so with that, I'll yield the floor then to, the next item on the agenda is the report of the president.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me first bring your attention to the fact book, which is hot off the press, and this comes out of the Office of Planning and Institutional Effectiveness. I think the moral of the story here is that we're better than we used to be at putting together facts about the institution, but we are going to be data-driven. So the data will become more sophisticated and deeper as time goes by. And some of it will be for external consumption, but a lot of it will be for internal consumption as these committees work with the retention and progression and graduation rates of the students. The second thing I bring to your attention is the Legacy magazine issue, which is also hot off the press. Our marketing campaign is the faces of UDC, and as you can see, this is a fold-out. And I think it's been pretty good from what I've seen. I've been through it. Pretty good, very good, John. I'm sorry. I think it's well done, well presented, and the campaign seems to be serving its purpose, which is to let people know that we're here as the first phase. And then the second phase will be more directed toward recruitment, enrollment, those sorts of things. let's see now. Yes, sir.
May I just commend you on the fact book? This is the best one that I have seen since I have been on this board.
Give Maria our kudos. And her team. Yes. I didn't do a written report other than the last tab in your book, which is you just finished approving the 18 work plans. The last tab is a summary of what we got accomplished under the 17 work plans, which is, it says at the top, Attachment A, Vision 2022. That was the terminology we were using back in 17. You know, you can take your time and go through it. If you want more detailed reporting by objective, we have that as well. We just did a summary here. Unless you want me to walk through each and every one, I'll just leave it for your information.
Sure.
And then if you have questions, you can always ask me those questions and we can respond in our usual fashion, which is as timely and as quickly as we can. Okay? The other thing is that, not to my amazement, but to my mild and pleasant surprise, all of these things we're doing are starting to come together. You know, we started out in 2015-16 with fixing things, and then in 16-17 we started laying a foundation through these work plans, and then in 17-18 we started pointing the work plans in the direction of a strategic plan. The strategic planning process, as unusual as it is actually working. It's extremely transparent. We've probably got more input on the university's strategic plan from across the entire district than I'm used to seeing. We've had good participation by the board, a little confusion between the work plans and the strategic plan, but I'm glad we straightened all of that out. And it's been good input, so that at the end of the day, where we sit here right now, you know, we have a draft of a mission, vision, and overarching strategy and goals. That may not be the final one, but it is in a form now that I think we're all more or less close to embracing. And we've used that as the heart of the presentations we're doing to drive what we're calling the campaign for UDC, which is our campaign to try to get our funding up to a level that is really required in order for us to meet the goals and expectations that we'd like to meet on behalf of the district. That brings us to what's happening this evening, which is the mayor's budget session. I see Odie's here. Is Odie going to do a presentation? Okay, is that on the – okay, good.
Yes.
The game is on. You will see a few announcements going out. One just went out – One just went out to our 10,000 alumni, telling them what's going on and who to contact and why. Another is going out to the ANCs. I met with the ANC 3F last night, and they've already passed the resolution and sent it on to the mayor. There's another session going to be. It says we support UDC, and we'd like to see the equity imperative fully funded, or something like that. We can send you a copy. But that we actually drafted it and sent it out to all of the ANCs. And to tell you what we're up against, and so we have these shirts now, and if you can wear them, but our job is really to be seen, because we looked at the mayor's format for tonight, and, you know, it's a pretty standard sort of format where people are going to be at tables, so make sure you grab a table. We need UDC at every table. And then she's going to lay out her priorities, and then she's going to ask you to rate her priorities or something like that. But in the education cluster, she asked, which of these education priorities do you support? And it has K-12 and it has live, but it doesn't have UDC. So feel free to write in UDC. You did, yes. Yeah, write in UDC. And then say that, you know, we think it's time for UDC to be funded. The conversation with the ANC last night, which ended up well, but it was interesting to me in the sense that one of the questions was, how can we trust that you're going to do what you say you're going to do? And which is fair, I mean, given, I guess, the history of things in and around UDC. But we said what we had accomplished, and, you know, I explained to them that, you know, getting off of probation with the federal government and financial aid is not a little thing. I mean, that's a heavy lift that we pulled off in less than a year. And then we just found out yesterday that we've done so well with our federal funds audits that they're not even going to audit us this year. Is that right? Yeah, they've waived the need to audit us this year, which is not a little thing. Right. And so, you know, I think we've done enough to show that we are we can be trusted stewards of public resources, and we're ready now to put that on the line to say, look, let's fix the road to the middle class and finish the pathway. So that's where we are, and I think it's catching on. That would be my report, unless there's some specific questions. I usually go through my calendar and kind of bring the board up to speed, but it's been so much, so quickly, so often, I just hadn't had a chance to do that. But we'll catch back up with that routine next board meeting.
All righty. Are there any questions for the president? All righty. Seeing
Mr. Chairman?
That, sorry.
Yes, it would be useful if the board received just copies of the letters that you're sending out to the ANCs and the community people. So as we interact with people,
absolutely,
we can know what you've asked of them, what you want them to do, and how we can reinforce that
sure.
at the meetings where we are.
So, we send it to Beverly, and then Beverly sends it to the board. And so whatever we send out, mass produced, it'll go to Beverly, and she'll send it to you all.
Yeah, that would be very helpful. Okay. The other thing is that next time around, it would be, even though we can read these outcomes, it would be interesting to know what you thought were the most significant outcomes from
for 17.
For 17.
I can go through it and just email the board and answer that question if you like.
It would be interesting to know that because some things that you achieved that we wouldn't necessarily understand how important that was to what you're next going to do.
Well, I can if you want to take 10 minutes, I can do it now.
Well, that's up to the chairman. Sure.
Fine with me. I think we're good on time.
So on the curriculum pathways, that is a big deal for us because of the way the community college was started as a technical school, and we're trying to transform it into a school that feeds our bachelor's degree programs. Tony Summers headed up that initiative, and we have three now in the queue that will be the first. But I think the bigger accomplishment there is that we've set the tone between the two campuses so that now the departments are talking more to each other. They're looking for more opportunities to create these pathways. I think if you look at his 18 work plan, you'll see more and more of these, what were technical degrees, be converted into academic degrees that are going to push more students into the bachelor's programs. So I'd say that was a big deal. The skilled faculty with the tools, procedures, and pedagogies. This has yet to be accomplished, but what was accomplished here was that a plan on how to do it was developed, and it was called SPADL. I'm trying to remember what this is. Carl here, y'all?
Yeah, Strategic Plan for Advanced Teaching and Learning.
Well, there you go, the Strategic Plan for Advanced Teaching and Learning. And so in 18, you'll start to see us execute that strategic plan. But the process there was really to put the plan on the table, have it vetted and embraced so that we can execute it this year. Dramatically increase the programs and graduation of our students through aggressive interventions. That's all about William Latham's work, which you all know in detail. I think the big achievement here, which may or may not have been on the list, was establishing that the committee on student outcomes. We did that, you know, by design because we felt like it was something that was going to drive everything else we want to do. And Josh does have an expertise in that area, so I was glad that he has finally decided to claim UDC publicly as being a member of the board. And I think the conversation we had at that last session about establishing baselines and making sure we track all of our students is going to be significant going forward. Advanced teaching learning effectiveness, the ways in which it proactively meets the needs of diverse range of learners. So this is the Center for Learning Advancement primarily. And this was initially set up as the unit to train faculty on how to do online coursework. But it sort of morphed into more of a professional development arm that does a lot of training on the latest teaching methods. It does do the online, Quality Matters work. It does encourage the faculty to use the tools like Blackboard and other electronic tools that are necessary in order to educate the modern student. The other thing that it's doing, though, I'm missing one thing here. Golly, what did I miss, Carl? Did I miss anything?
Were there
Come to the mic, will you? Please, thank you.
Good evening, Carl Moore, Assistant Chief Academic Officer. The establishment of the center, I think that's a major accomplishment, as well as the other pieces. There were three instructional consultants that were hired, which actually I think I don't want to call anybody out, but one of them is here. And the other piece, this upcoming fall, we're going to have faculty fellows, which we're naming Matilla Minor Faculty Fellows, who will be carrying on the professional development work in the colleges. Keeping track, trend with the contemporary version of CETL's, Centers for Excellence in Teaching and Learning. So that's the other piece, President Mason.
Thank you. Yep. And then one other piece is that, our faculty wants to be state of the art, right? And I think we have a responsibility to help them in that effort. So, for example, we have annual faculty reviews and they have to submit portfolios, but they're used to submitting paper. So now we're using TK20 for electronic submissions. Cal, the Center for Advanced Learning.
Advancement of Learning
is also helping facilitate that process. So there's a lot going on. We know where we want to go. We don't always get there as quickly and aggressively as we try to get there. But at least we know where we're headed and we can track how far we are down the road as we travel that road. And then the last one, this preferred employer, that's all back office operations. That's why it's called Teaching and Learning Support. And Troy is not here, but he's got a long list of things to do. And it's a hard area to establish baselines in because when you're talking about, policies, we had a policy review committee, 700 some odd policies and procedures we identified. Half of them on paper, half of them in DC, MR. Mm-hmm. We're not sure which ones go where, so it's an unraveling process that, it's hard to establish a baseline for, but we know the work that has to get done. And that's all about the teaching and learning support. So that's a quickie on.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
So they're all important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Any other questions?
Okay. Thank you for that. Thank you for that report, Ron. The next items on the agenda are committee reports. There is no executive report or committee of the whole report, so that will take us to academic and student affairs. Dr. Tard has stepped out momentarily, so we'll skip that one, and we'll go to audit, budget, finance. General Schwartz?
There are no reports for audit, budget, and finance. We did not have a meeting during the period. We have a meeting scheduled for the 27th, a joint meeting with operations.
Thank you, Trustee Schwartz. All right. Yes.
February 27th.
Oh, I was actually going to go back. I was going to just go. Yeah, when he came back, just do the whole thing. No, I wouldn't dare skip over it. No. I just wanted to stay.
Okay.
And now he's back. All right. We were talking about you, and you were voted to do the most work. All righty. All right, so the committee reports.
Mr. Chairman, just...
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I don't have the February 27th meeting.
No, March 27th.
Oh, March.
Oh, I thought you said February.
March 27th.
Okay.
Yep, I've
got
that. Okay. Good.
At 6 o'clock.
At 6 o'clock.
Right. Okay. Thank you. All righty, academic and student affairs.
Sorry to disappoint you all. If we've taken care of most of the business that we talked about
okay.
in our meeting.
That's fine. That's fine.
With work plans.
Okay. All right.
Audie's here, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
You want to do that after?
We're gonna go through and do the other two subcommittee reports, and then we'll get to Audie in just a moment.
Okay.
Okay. So, Alumni Task Force, Trustee Shelton.
I'm glad. I really have a lot. Beginning on the 10th of February, the Masons kicked off our Founders Week gala activity with a donation of $15,000 and two basketball game victories and last-minute, last-shot victories. Miss Jackson was there dancing her heart out to support the team and activity. We had a large crowd, and it was a wonderful kickoff as we prepared for Founders Day. On Wednesday, the alumni came for the Hall of Fame basketball game, which we enjoyed. On Thursday, the Founders Day, was a great show. The men of Omega Psi Phi fraternity, Omicron Gamma chapter, We're on campus and for the first time came as a unit and across universities and colleges to join together, had a luncheon, and had a guest speaker. The president stopped in and said a few words and impressed a bunch of old men with a new attitude. So we're going to try to do it again next year with some cash. On Friday, we had the Hall of Fame induction dinner, and again, the president was out, and we appreciate his support. Benny Adams, B.F. Henderson, Butler, Phil Stevens, Carolyn Wells were inducted into the seventh class. And on Saturday, five alumni are bringing GED graduates here on Saturday to give them their diploma and encourage them to enroll and attend in the University of the District of Columbia.
Excellent. All righty. Thank you very much, Trustee Chelton. Appreciate that. All right. Trustee Jackson, do you have anything to report out from the Communications Task Force?
Yes. We met with our student task force with Dr. Latham, and we raised a couple of concerns. It was a very good meeting, for our first meeting. We discussed marketing and how we market UDC as a whole, and brought issues upon Perkins. We had discussion with Perkins himself, along with his team, and he talked about $2,500 stipend that he's going to give to the students for catering meals each semester. Also, we also discussed, of course, IT issues concerning the CC, and let's see what else we have here. And a couple of students had concerns about with the closing of Building 41 and the changing of the libraries. They brought up the archives and the storage and how to access them, things like mm-hmm. that. Also, the issue on Hampton Hall being renovated with artwork. They really had a problem with it, so we was going to find some type of way to work together, especially with facilities on the issue. So that's really about it.
Okay. I'm curious, what were some of the IT issues that the students were asking about?
Their Wi-Fi, and it's been accessible in different areas, not mm-hmm. the whole CC, and their smart boards not having access to them is not working, things mm-hmm. like that.
Okay.
So basically the same issues we have in here.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And were you able to get meaningful responses to those, do you believe?
No. Okay. Oh, also issue about accountability.
Accountability in terms of?
Administration, Perkins, things mm-hmm. like that.
Okay, gotcha. And I just want to make sure that I was clear on the last issue where you were talking about the artwork. I didn't hear what that was specifically in response to.
Which one?
The last issue that you had in your report about, you had mentioned artwork.
Oh, it was presented, well, not really presented to the students, but told to the students that Heritage Hall will be no longer in use because they are doing some type of artwork from Anacostia with the Smithsonian, something like that. And mm-hmm. it's not being displayed of UDC mm-hmm. Archives. Mm-hmm. So they had an issue with that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Did you want to say something?
Well, a couple of things. One she said I should have said. But on the, just on Heritage Hall, just so I understand correctly, that is the Anacostia Museum that is putting a display here, and it's a display on D.C. in the 70s. And so UDC is a part of it, but it's not a permanent display, so they must be closing it down to put up the display. It's not permanently out of use. Okay, good. But she did mention that we're closing down Building 41. I should have mentioned that. We're in the process of emptying it out as orderly as we can because we know that any extreme weather, cold, rain, too much heat, the building is just not usable. And so we're going to have to take it offline as much as possible so that if it does go down, we'll have less of an emergency than we would have otherwise. And so we've notified the folks downtown. And we've broken down our capital request on a building-by-building basis, and so they know that if there's one thing we have to get done, it's get the capital we need to fix Building 41. I needed to tell you all that, and I forgot.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Trustee Jackson, did you have anything else you wanted to add on yours, or just for the good of the group, anything? Okay. All right. Thank you for that report. I appreciate it. All right. The next item is Community College. Dr. Tarr, you're up.
Yes.
And
thank
Odie.
You.
Thank
you.
Okay,
Mr.
Sure.
And Dr. Summers? One of the things that we have been talking about,
We've been talking for quite some time now about pathways, and several months ago we had a presentation from Odie McDonald. Odie Donald.
The Chevrolet.
Yeah.
Don't take the.
And we had a presentation talking about establishing pathways from workforce to the community college and then beyond. And so, Dr. Summers, please.
Yes. Tony Summers, Chief Community College Officer. For the last year, UDC has been working very diligently with the Department of Employment Services and its director, Mr. Odie Donald. We have partnered on Quick Path to Energy that you'll hear a bit about this evening, as well as a new venture entitled the Infrastructure Academy, which Odie will address, but there's roughly $19 million that has been put into play in order to rebuild and train citizens to help refurbish, enhance, and restore the infrastructure of DC, and working with companies such as Pepco, WMATA, and several others that have also come to the table. So Director Donald has agreed to provide us with an overview of the Infrastructure Academy and UDC's role.
Good evening. So I know y'all have some other places to be, so I've come once before, so I'll present, but if you got questions, you can stop me in the middle. I'll answer questions and all of that good stuff. Now, Dr. Mason, is this the same group that I was in front of? Because it can determine.
You had a committee before. This is the entire
board. Got it. So I'll go through the whole shebang. All right. Well, so in general, the DC Infrastructure Academy, Mayor Bowser has been very committed to workforce development and education, as I think everyone knows. And so she tasked me and a few other people about 2 years ago for finding solutions to really ensure the district residents have as many opportunities in new and growing environments and careers and industries as possible. And so one of the areas that we saw is infrastructure is a really big deal. I think we're hearing from it. One of the few things that I think everyone along with this new federal administration agrees on is that the infrastructure in America right here in the district and really all around needs some work. And so we looked at the infrastructure industry a little bit different than folks traditionally do. Most times it's usually construction support is kind of how I describe it. I think what we've seen here in the district is those ancillary activities really impact and really decide on where our investment should go. So infrastructure as defined for this project is transportation, logistics, energy efficient technology, information security, and then what we would call traditional energy and utilities. So that would be your Pepcos and DC Waters and folks like that that Dr. Summer mentioned. What we also saw is that only 13 of 95 positions that are in the greater Washington region require a bachelor's degree or more. 13 of 95 entry level, what we would consider or classify entry level positions. The other case for the District of Columbia in considering infrastructure as a primary area for our investments is where those entry level salaries are, and they are about $38.54 an hour for the entry level positions across the board. And so that was another big selling point for us. I think one of the biggest challenges, though, is that while they don't require a a credential or a bachelor's degree is the credential, they do require special requirements. So you might have a CDL as one. You might require some type of MIG or TIG welding where you require a certification. So there are a variety of things that you have to have. And so after doing our assessment in 2016, the WIC decided that infrastructure should be one of our, at that time, five, now six, high-demand areas. And so from there, we looked at a few opportunities, including the PEPCO merger settlement, and decided to take the $5.2 million from the merger settlement and then another $16.5 million in capital funding to be able to stand up a building in 2021, a facility that would coordinate all of these activities. And I know one night, I won't forget it, it was about 10:30 at night. Mayor don't often call me, but she called me and said, well, can we open this thing up tomorrow? And so that was that. I also don't often say no, but you could imagine we couldn't do that. And so we started, one of the first calls I made was to Dr. Summers to figure out what we could do tomorrow. And we came up with the Quick Path to Energy program in partnership with PEPCO to really kind of connect the dots and start doing some of this work now. And so, I'll say PEPCO because they're one of the primary partners, but actually all of our utility partners are engaged in the process. And so we launched that, about a year ago, Dr. Summers, now. So I think we're coming up on our one-year anniversary of the program. Mm-hmm. We committed to 10 pilot cohorts. We've completed five, and we took a little hiatus so that we can analyze the program, make it a little bit better, and expand it. But so far, very quickly, some of the outcomes, I think we had about 75, and it's either 77 or 73, so we're going to say approximately 75 participants go through, and we basically give everybody about 5 months to get hired through the program, so we're still well within that time frame. But already we have about 30 people that are connected to full-time jobs out of the 75. Then we have another 15 others that are in pre or registered apprenticeships, and then of course some of those others just completed, so we're trying to get them through the pipeline. I think one of the early learnings that we had from the program is that the utility hiring schedule takes a heck of a lot longer than we thought. And so luckily we do have a lot of different partners involved in it, but as we put together the second part of the cohort, will actually take place in the facility, which is another advantage that we found, is that it usually takes about 4 months for somebody to get hired in the utility industry, whether you're coming through our program or you're coming off the street. We've kind of knocked about a month off of that timeline because we've aligned with the utilities, but still it's a little longer delay than, you know, than I like. And so we've added some additional services and things to make sure we connect people. And while it's not a quote-unquote guarantee that if you go through the program, I think we've seen that, you know, on average, and again, I don't count the people who just finished and they're within what we call the job matching process, but we're at about a 65 to 70% placement rate, and it puts people, what I would say, at the front of the line. So we're very excited about the pilot because now we've got an opportunity to even improve that. So good results and some good outcomes. As we look more broadly at infrastructure, one of the things that we saw as 2017 just ended, there's even a stronger case than we thought there was initially. So just in the District of Columbia, so most times when we analyze job opportunities, you know, D.C. got through and through, but we look at the region to figure out where the opportunities are. But just in the District of Columbia, there were 2,000 utility jobs in airport and transportation. To be honest, we didn't look at that as a part of logistics in the way that we did. That's part of why I called it out in the presentation. But there were 100 unfilled jobs that they consider entry level, meaning, you know, even if it's a pilot, well, when you go through the pilot program, once you finish that first entry level job with some of the lower tier airports and even, you know, just the different levels, their average salary for those 100 jobs was at about $250,000. And so we actually got three people placed in the logistics jobs outside of our formal training, and I think their average salary was at about $119,000. But there are a lot of different opportunities up and down the logistics arena that we didn't initially pay attention to. I think another piece that we saw is in rail transportation was another area of low-hanging fruit where the average salary there was around $90,000. And so we did get some people placed last year. I know we did a lot of CDL with WMATA, but of the non-CDL, non-logistics transportation opportunities, our average placement was at about $88,000. So it's right around where these numbers are. But again, we just saw some missed opportunities that we want to take advantage of. Also with truck transportation and logistics, while our numbers are very similar to these, I think our placement there is around, has ranged between $75,000 to $85,000. We see that with overtime and some of the other things, those folks that get that secondary credential, that secondary CDL, not just the CDL-A, they're averaging around $100,000. So we want to make sure that we take advantage of those opportunities through the Infrastructure Academy. And so I know that some members of this group know that basically on Labor Day, the mayor, members of PEPCO, Washington Gas, UDC, the AFL-CIO, and then a variety of district agencies, including UDC, signed on to the MOU for the Infrastructure Academy. And I know that Dr. Summers and President Mason don't know this yet, but in March, we have identified a date, which I can't tell you today because I haven't had an opportunity to tell them, but in March we'll be cutting a ribbon on the interim facility. So again, I think, you know, the mayor, we're not supposed to really have something stood up permanent until 2021, but she is fairly aggressive on some of these things, and so we will be opening up a facility in March of 2016. The Infrastructure Academy itself is a little different, I guess, animal than what we normally do, and it's because of our approach. So I think many folks in this room, at least I hope many folks in this room, are familiar with how we coordinate services through our American Job Centers. So currently we have four, and you can receive a variety of different services at these job centers. I would look at the Infrastructure Academy as we'll call it an industry-specific American Job Center on steroids. So what that means is not only can you go in and get the job matching, the job placements, get access to training, hosting job fairs and all that good stuff, people will also be able to receive training on site. So today we actually did a tour of the facility, even though, you know, we're still in the construction phase, with one of our solar providers who's actually going to provide solar installation training on site. So people will be able to walk into the door and never have to leave to be able to get all of the services that they need. So that's one of the big benefits to DC residents, but also to businesses. When we talk about some of our current programs, and so for you guys who have the presentations under the current program slide, which is a little bit further back, it's probably about halfway back in your presentation, one of the key areas I want you to look at, which is very different than how we have done things in the past, and I know I heard President Mason mention the recent success, and I thought y'all would have been in here clapping about not having to be on, you know, the federal government's negative list for financial aid. So, hey, look, man, that's a really big deal. And so we're in the same situation. I think our workforce programs were kind of dragged through the mud because we were on two of those lists. And so we recently got out. So I think we're all extremely excited about that. But I think it's because we have all under the administration decided to do things a little bit differently. And that's make sure that the goal is not just to get somebody a credential, for them to get a degree through UDC, or for them to come through us and get a certificate, but to get a credential that also leads and connects to employment. And so that is what the Infrastructure Academy does, and it's also why our preferred partner is UDC, is because by going to UDC, we've been able to do things like Quick Path to Energy and other programs that we can stand up. that not only get people the credential that they need, because they do have to have it, but we add wraparound services like some things, behavioral health, work readiness training, and on-the-job experience. So I think with the Quick Path program, it was a little bit different because it's a shorter-term program that gets people that entry-level credential. But what we did is connect people to what we're calling career exploration, meaning they had a tour of the Pepco facility, or we had a variety of different employers come in and actually tell people how to actually enter into their doors at the very beginning of the program, so we're able to layer a few things on top of that. And so that's a big difference in how we're coordinating things through the Infrastructure Academy versus some of our traditional AJCs. And once we stand this up, we're going to catch the other parts of our programs up to it. And so very quickly, I'll just give you some highlights on some of the initial training activities that will be in the center in March when they open. And so while I'm telling you we're going to have a ribbon cutting, in addition to the ribbon cutting, you're going to be able to walk right in and get services. So we're going to be operational from the very first day that that we start. And so the Quick Path to Energy program will be launching whatever the variation. We're still kind of talking to our business partners to figure out what the new and enhanced pilot looks like. But in March, we plan to release that and be able to deliver services in that manner. Well, also, we noticed that although the Quick Path to Energy program was a quality program, things like on-the-job safety that you get through the OSHA 10 program was not a part of that or any other standalone program that we had, even our pre-apprenticeship construction programs. So we're adding that and including it. We are taking the Quick Path to Energy model, and it works so well, we're actually connecting it to transportation. So we have a partnership with WMATA and ICDOT, as well as all of our CDL providers, to deliver Quick Path to Transportation to help people get their CDLs as well as some of that on-the-job experience right away. The Solar Works program, which I told you about, where you get solar installation, and then those other programs that you get at the AJCs now will also be available. So that includes work readiness, resume assistance, and some of the, I mean, you know, I guess I have to be careful in how I say it, but, you know, people are able to participate and celebrate with recreational drugs are accessible in the District of Columbia when you look at marijuana. And so we have a Blunt Truth campaign that we're also incorporating into the day-to-day operations, so that as a part of our work readiness, we're also going to let people know that while there is legislation that allows you to partake in medicinal enhancements, that on the job they may not necessarily be legal. And so as you make your decisions, this is how you progress. So we really provide a holistic services through this process. And of course, CDL, job referral, job fairs, and we're also adding something called customized recruitments. And so one of the first ones that we'll be having, unfortunately the Infrastructure Academy won't be open yet, but we're partnering with the Maple View Flats Project, and we're doing a specific construction related recruitment for them. We'll also follow that up with Yelp. I think many people know that Yelp has relocated to the district, so we'll also be doing a specific recruitment for them. And so while these are outside of the Infrastructure Academy, those types of activities will also take place. I would say another piece that I know that Dr. Summers and specifically Dr. Johnson on his team are very aware of that is probably good news and good information for the board is that we recently released a request for qualifications to partner with the District of Columbia and the Infrastructure Academy. Now, UDC is one of our preferred partners, and we're able to partner with them on everything from our federally funded training to even what I would consider some customized offerings that we create, like Quick Path. We released a request for qualifications that allows any provider at any level who is interested in partnering with us to tell us about our offerings. And so you know how big of an endeavor, you know, it is to operate UDC, and specifically within those workforce programs, but we also have that same challenge. So UDC, I think, also submitted some information as well about all of the programs that you provide, and that's important because many things that we would consider infrastructure, or that you might not consider infrastructure, might get lost in the mix, and that might be an opportunity or a missed opportunity. And I think we saw that. I'll be honest, you know, we didn't look at aerospace as an industry at all related to logistics, but probably the biggest one, you know, in the District of Columbia. And so through our partnership, UDC, specifically Dr. Summers, brought that to our attention. And so this RFP process allows not only UDC but others to really kind of bring those things to us. So the actual solicitation closes on the 23rd, so that's this week, Friday, I believe, and we will have a lot more information about what our offerings will be. So we're starting, initially we committed at 15, now it looks like we'll have a total of 19 total offerings that will start in March, and then when the RFQ closes, we'll select some additional ones based on funding. But at full capacity before we have the final site, we expect to have about 60 different offerings, and over a three-year period to serve about 40,000 people. So it's a really big project. We did, and for your information, I won't go through them now, but I included a sample list. We did a demand analysis, which I talked to you guys about in the committee meeting, where we surveyed about 6,500 infrastructure businesses in the greater Washington region. We took all of their information, of course, did a lot of one-on-ones and follow-ups, but we have determined what all of the specific skills are that are in need right now in the district for every job opening that is open in the greater Washington area, what those skills are, and then how many projected jobs they'll have over the 3 years. And so that is what led to the RFQ that we did for additional services. So there's a sample of some of those infrastructure-related skills that are necessary and that providers will have to provide within your presentation. And so what I could not tell you at the last meeting that I can tell you now is in March when we open, we will have a location that is east of the river in Ward 8. It is the old Wilkinson Elementary School. You can drive by now and see there is an interesting transformation happening there that we're very proud of. Vibrant colors, a nice structure to the building. And for you, you can see also the DCIA logo, which is included in your package, and the front of Wilkinson. So what you have here is what it's projected to look like. But if you drive by, which I said I wasn't going to go by until we completed construction, but I cheated a little bit today and went by. So it's a very impressive structure, and you'll see right now we're using about 20,000 square feet. When fully operational, whatever the final site is, it'll be about 60,000 square feet. For public participants in the room, you don't have to wait to get engaged with the Infrastructure Academy now. We actually, through our DC networks, all of the programs that you'll be able to access are available right now. So you can go to dcnetworks.org and start the registration process, and anything that you're interested in the infrastructure industry or any of our other programs, you can access right now, as well as going to any of our American Job Centers. I think probably the easiest one and the preferred one for the Infrastructure Academy is 3720 MLK, because it's in the area and is very easy for you to connect to. I think one of the other added benefits that we have now is that we are in the process of leasing some space near Anacostia, so we'll be operating a shuttle that will have about four stops to make it very easy, and it'll be at no cost. You just have to register online for the Infrastructure Academy, and you'll be able to access the shuttle so that you can go to and from. So if you got any questions, you know, I'll take them now.
Okay. Thank
you. Trustee Felton. Yeah, that's been very exciting and certainly very impressive. Let me ask what I hope isn't a political question, but okay. In your view, do you see duplication, or do you think that, do you see mergers? I mean, much of this, I, of course, assume existed in some place.
No.
Even the district. But you're saying it never existed.
Oh, no. So there's nothing else like this anywhere in the country, maybe not the world. So the idea is a culmination of a few different things. So so I'm from Georgia. I know y'all hear the twang in my voice. And so we were one of the first ones early on in my career. We launched Get Into Energy Georgia and did something very similar to this around craft labor and the nuclear power plants down. We redid Plant Vogtle 1 and 2 there. And so very successful, but one of the issues is that it only addressed, you know, one particular industry, and we connected it to the technical college system, which on the front end was a very smart idea because you had an infrastructure to train people well, but we were not as flexible and easy to coordinate with business using that model, and there were some challenges that we had there. In Pennsylvania, specifically in Philadelphia, they have the Grid Academy. The issue with theirs is that, you know, I'm not sure if you're familiar as much with how the grid operations work, but it is a very high-tech piece. And so most folks, to even qualify to enter into their Grid Academy, you've got to have at least a bachelor's degree and then an additional certification. The other services that we provide, we look at this as a part of the American Job Center network. But most of the things that you can access here, you can't access anywhere else. Specifically, being able to have training in the facility is something that is normally unheard of. So imagine most issues that you have getting a CDL besides background and things of that nature is, yeah, you can take the written test or whatnot, but the road test is an issue. We literally have a bus, two of them, and the space to do practice and things of that nature. So we are really marrying the on-the-job experience as well as the classroom experience. And so, I mean, if you find somewhere else where they have that, please tell me, because we're going to steal that too.
No, I think my point was more of you talk about a very aggressive program, very positive mm-hmm. program. You know, I look at, you know, the district school system. I look at what we offer in our workforce development. Mm-hmm. I listen to what you're talking about as part mm-hmm. of D.C. government. Mm-hmm. I guess the question is there a point at which those three come together?
Oh, no, I think that's the whole model. So I didn't do a good job at presenting if you didn't get that. So the benefit of DCIA is that, so no question at all, we can provide business services to PEPCO, right? Mm-hmm. But we can't provide the infrastructure to actually train somebody to get to. We can fund the training, we can do all of that, but we can't actually connect the training and specify it to their needs right now. But so the Infrastructure Academy allows me to sit in the room with Dr. Johnson and PEPCO and WMATA and everybody else and figure out exactly what their needs are, connect them to our resources, and develop a specific program that they want in real time, and connect district residents to those 2,000 jobs that are open today,
right,
as well as get them ready for the future. So we've always been able to do that. I mean, we got great relationships with DCPS long before, I ain't no genius now, so long before I got here, UDC and DOES were working well together. But being able to respond in real time has never been able to happen, and it doesn't happen in many places. And so this has allowed us to do that. And so we've done it with Quick Path to Energy. But then again, I'm saying look at it on steroids. Not only have we done it with Quick Path to Energy, we've done it with Solar Works. We've got a 70% placement rate, people getting $25 an hour. Again, same thing, sitting down with those guys. And they're not even delivering Solar Works in the component that we have it now. We took it out and just did the installation part. But even that is a partnership where a bunch of smart people with some ideas coming together, figuring out what these solar contractors need, and then putting it into a space with the right contractors and developing it in real time. And then the next phase is to be able to do the long-term work that they need beyond installation. So, yeah, if it is duplication, it's some great duplication, and I want to duplicate the heck out of it. Absolutely, yeah.
So, Odie, did I hear you correctly? You said that UDC was such a valued partner that its logo was going to be on the building. And
so I tell you, so not on the building. The only logo that's going to be on the building is going to say, what is it, Administration of Muriel Bowser. So that's going to be as a part of the DCIA logo. But inside, literally, I went in there today, and we saw an opportunity to, because, you know, construction's still going on, and so what we're planning to do is all of the partners who signed the initial MOUs and MOAs or whatnot, there's like a, it's hard to describe, but we've got, I think, 16 rooms so far that are active. And for each room, we're going to kind of, you know, give a logo to somebody, almost like naming rights when you go to a stadium. And so the problem is that there's so much programming that hasn't been scheduled. You might have a room that doesn't have anything to do with what you have to do, but, yeah, your logo will be in there. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Trustee Jarvis, yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a fascinating presentation. What I'm trying to understand is how the university is married to this. Okay. In other words, and perhaps it's a goal of the university to be, you know, the provider of workforce training, like for 50% of the opportunities, and it's a goal of the community college to have, I don't know, X number of degrees completed over some period of time. So I'm not understanding what the strategic goals are respect to the UDC.
Some of those are still being developed. So to be honest with you, this project is not supposed to really happen until 2021. Uh-huh. But there are three ways in that y'all are partnering. Of course, I'll turn it over to Dr. Summers, but one, you're a strategic partner. So there is a small group that's helping to lead the implementation of this process, and UDC is a part of that. I think, secondly, when you look at all of our operations and all of our initial programming, we actually don't have a program that UDC isn't a part of. So when I talked about Quick Path to Energy and those 30 placements, well, of the whole 75 that have gone through the process, all of that training was delivered by UDC. And so when I say our preferred partner, I know I don't remember the gentleman the last time we were in a committee meeting. He said, well, we want to be the primary or partner or whatnot. Well, there's some restrictions to that because some of this funding is federal, and so I don't know if you guys know about the state eligible training providers list and some of those other things. You have to coordinate that way. So you may have a separate internal goal, but I think we're looking at it, especially as the administrator of the program, more broadly, because we can't guarantee a certain role for UDC, but being the person that helps develop some of the programs, et cetera, then a lot of the programming, so you don't have to go through the same RFP and procurement process for everything that everyone else does. And so some of it is capacity, some of it is the programming, and these first 2 years are considered baseline years. So the program does not kick off again until 2021. So in the interim, we have to develop the baseline to figure out, all right, we see that we can serve a capacity of about 40,000 people. Second part is now let's go back and look at business, what are their needs? And as we develop programs based on their needs, then we'll be able to identify how many credentials in what field, who delivers the training, et cetera, et cetera. And so some of the strategic aspects that you're looking for, there's not enough data in the delivery of services to be able to provide. And
As Odie indicated, we're still working on strategic initiatives. However, one of the other pieces in terms of working through this partnership, it has opened an opportunity through an MOU that we are developing that will allow both credit students who are working towards technical degrees at the community college, as well as workforce development students, to receive additional funding. So with the credit student who's working on a CTE degree, technical degree, the MOU will assist that student if they're eligible for DOE funding with up to $5,000 towards tuition and fees, transportation, as well as some additional wraparound services that our students are not currently receiving. So this is in addition to, by moving forward with the Infrastructure Academy, we also began to identify other ways in which we can help all of our students through DOES with funding that we did not have access to until this MOU. That is just a major opportunity for our students that, again, as I indicated, we've never had that opportunity before. So it's not just the Infrastructure Academy. There are also other avenues that are opening up for our students.
So, Mr. Chairman, we graduate students and we get tuition revenue. We have we can be the service provider for which we get a contract. But I'm looking for how the revenue interests of the university are being served through this, very frankly, because that's the role we play. And so if there's some way that we can refine that, in other words, are we strategic thinkers? And is that a revenue stream for us? Or are we glad to be at the table talking about how to plan it? And so I'm just...
Well, so I want to go back to that. So if you are delivering services, then yes, that's a revenue stream. So you definitely haven't been doing it for free. There's a cost associated. I would also say, no, there is not funding. Thank you for being a strategic partner. Everybody this is kind of just something that we're doing in the best interest of the district, including, you know, some of our private sector partners. But when you look at the revenue that could come in, so I think what Mr. Dr. Summers was talking about was the eligible training providers list. And so the federal government won't allow me to do an agreement with UDC to say, hey, you can serve 100 people at this 5,000, and then I allocate the funding to you. But if you have eligible participants, there is also no limit. And so if those participants were all, we'll say CDL training, you had 1,000 CDL trainees that you connected to us through the Infrastructure Academy or through the workforce system, period, then that's reimbursed at $5,000 per student, if that's the cost. You know, I mean, CDL probably is closer to about $2,500. But again, whatever that cost is per student, that revenue comes back into UDC. So that's how it works. And so the same way that, I don't know, Tony Thomas, which I think is one of our good training providers for CDL, I just left a CDL meeting. That's why I'm so versed on their stuff. But the same way that she receives funding on a per student basis, so with UDC.
So just very briefly, there was a provision in a bill that was introduced by Councilmember Catania that indicated that the University of the District of Columbia should be a preferred provider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he can't make a decision on federal funding in that manner. So that locally, absolutely. But when you look at the rules that go along with federal funds, with no disrespect to Councilmember Catania, he doesn't have oversight over that. So what the federal...
You only have federal training funds?
No, what I mean is that since it is a part of it, so just like when you do contracting, if there's a dollar of federal money in it, then you've got to abide by some of those federal rules. And so since there are many federal dollars in this, then it is a combination. It is federal and local.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any questions? All right. Mr. Donald, thank you very much for this.
No, I appreciate y'all having me.
Very good information. All right.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Summers, thank you as well. All right. We just have a couple more items before we're going to adjourn. Yeah. So, I'm sorry?
The president looking puzzled. I said we want to be at the table.
Oh, we always want to be at the table. Definitely. All righty. So the next item on the reports is operations.
Very briefly, we have a number of items that we'll be bringing to the table for our next meeting. We're definitely going to want to talk about food service, and you all have received your calendar of events for government relations.
When the board is going to be, the president is going to be meeting with the city council and the budget process. I hope you will plan to attend. The mayor has identified our part of Building 41 as an early childhood facility, so we're beginning our early childhood program back. All these items that are coming up, and that will conclude. And if there's any more information, we'll send you the COO's report so that you'll know what's on the agenda for the operations committee. But food service is something we want to talk about.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Student outcomes, Trustee Weiner is not here. I think he said that the next meeting was going to be in April, right?
May.
Or was it May?
May 23rd.
Oh, May 23rd? Okay, thank you. All righty. Thank you, Dr. Latham. Okay, and finished business, there is none. Let's go on to... Oh, sorry.
Also forgot to mention our performance hearing is next week, Tuesday the 27th at 1 o'clock.
Yes, for the UDC Foundation Board of Directors. Yes, so there's no unfinished business, so we'll just move on to one of our two new business items. Remember, Dr. Kingberry is going to speak. So the first new business item is the appointment of UDC Foundation Board of Directors. Hello there.
Good evening, everyone. I bring you greetings on behalf of the Board of Directors of the UDC Foundation. First of all, I want to thank everyone that has been involved. We've had many trustee members to be involved in our fundraising efforts throughout the year, and so I want to thank you all for rising to the challenge, which is the theme for our campaign this year. As you know, we have a challenge grant from the City Council to match every gift that is given to the two foundations, both the Law School Foundation and the UDC Foundation, up to $1.5 million. So if we raise $3 million, we'll get $1.5 million, and we're coming close, so we're hoping to hit that number really soon. So I want to thank you again for your support, and also next week, the third week of March, we're having a campus-wide philanthropy week, and so we encourage y'all to support that as well. Today I want to bring the nomination of Mark Battle as a new member of the Board of Directors. Our Board of Directors met last December and unanimously nominated Mark Battle, who is an alumnus of the university. He has been a really enthusiastic and outstanding alumnus and has supported university activities for many years. He's also been a sponsor for our most recent event, which was the Hall of Fame event. PEPCO sponsored the event, and we believe that his nomination will allow us to strengthen the corporate representation among our board, and I believe that his bio was circulated.
Mm-hmm. He's an alum, right?
And he's an alum, yes.
Yes. All righty, thank you for that. Are there any questions about Mr. Battle? All right, the chair will...
All in favor.
Okay, all those in favor of nominating or confirming Mr. Mark Battle to the board for the foundation, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none, Mr. Battle is confirmed. Congratulations, Mr. Battle. Thank you very much. All right, I don't think he's here. No, I don't see him. Okay, all right, the next item on our agenda is the Faculty Senate wanted to speak about, well, Dr. Alvin Kingberry wanted to speak about trustee representation. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Arlene Kingberry, Chair of the Faculty Senate. I will be brief. On behalf of the Faculty Senate, I'm here to petition for your approval for a board resolution requesting an ex officio seat for faculty on the Board of Trustees. I have the feeling that many of you know the value, power, and importance of faculty involvement in institutional decision-making for students and the university as a whole, which is essential to ensuring the success of strategic plans. I won't bore you with a lot of things because you know us. We have met individually with each of you. We invited you to our board retreat, where we gave you a full presentation on the reason why we need to have this seat to have a voice. We've also petitioned Chair Councilman Mendelson, who expressed the interest and said that we should go through the process to bring it back to the board. Therefore, we are petitioning the board for a resolution to the DC Council for action which would amend DC Code 523.01 to include faculty representation selected by the Faculty Senate as a non-voting ex officio member of the Board of Trustees.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Trustees will have this information and they can review it. So thank you very much. I appreciate it. All right. That concludes the formal meeting portion of our meeting. But before we go, I just wanted to, and thank you for the reminder, Trustee Bettazzone. But Dean Broderick.
That's right.
has made the decision, which has caused much anguish and agita among us, to
and some happiness
for you, but to leave the law school deanship. And so we just wanted to thank you for your service. You know, the success stories that emanate from the law school are just amazing, and so much of it is owed to you and the wonderful work that you're doing. And you're a constant billboard for the law school. You're just always advertising, always selling your students, your faculty, the law school itself. And so we appreciate that. And I just wanted to say on behalf of the board, thank you for everything that you've done. You will not, your shoes will not easily be replaced at the law school. Alrighty, so with
Mr.
that,
Chair?
Okay, non-debatable motion
Chair?
To adjourn. Oh, yeah, sorry.
If you could go back to the minutes,
sure.
And if you can change the trustees present of Gabriella Lewis. I think there's a mistake there.
Lemus.
All right, so it has Gabriella Lewis there. So
okay. It's misspelled, yes. Trustee Lemos, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, thank
okay,
you.
Okay, we'll get that fixed. Thank you. All right, so with that, ladies and gentlemen, we are adjourned. How many trustees are going to go to the meeting tonight or planning on going? One, two, three? Okay, looks like a good number. Okay, good. All right, so thank you for that. And, folks, the meeting is at the Student Center starting at 6:30, so you're more than welcome to join us. Thank you very much.